This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
Just as I started off this morning, I just mentioned about our upcoming week's retreat, and using today as an opportunity today just to reflect upon the way that we go into the retreat, the way that what sort of spirit or attitude that we go into, how we address a week's retreat, which for most of us, well, all of us, I would suggest that, you know, such retreats are very challenging. These things come and go, but invariably, at some point, even if you find the retreat quite easy, there are invariably periods where you find it difficult. Some way, I'd be very surprised actually. If you breeze through the whole week. You can let me know what you're on, please. I'd be very interested. to learn to go in with a skillful attitude, and not projecting. And not turning it into already making it very difficult for yourself by deciding how difficult it's going to be for you and all the pain and suffering you're going to go through and wonder how you're going to get through the other end and just build all these barriers up before you even get there, before you even arrive at the place. You know, this is called projecting. This is about living in the future. Now, the difference there, now I just mentioned that hopefully we'd be wearing white and black as we are now, as we do. And you have to give that some thought, because it's not a day where you just pick your shirt up and go, come here. Nothing much to think about, but going for a week, you've got to think about it a bit and plan it. And I mean, I don't know how often you change your clothes. It's getting a bit personal. I mean, you may get through the whole week with one shirt, I don't know, but it's up to you. But you might think, you know, 7 days you want various garments. You don't know if it's going to be hot or cold. You know, this is the way it is in our country. Even in the middle of summer it can be cold. So you have to go prepared, and you have to think about these things and go with a collection of garments, I would suggest. Well, I would imagine most of us will be doing that. And you could say, well, hang on a minute, you talk about projection. Don't project, don't live in the future, live in the present. But that's living in the future, but actually that's not how it's defined. Because we are human beings, we have the intelligence. Of course, we do plan things, and I'm sure if somebody took their pet dog or their pet cat along, I doubt very much whether the cat or the dog would sort of be thinking about what it's going to be like when they get there. They don't. Animals don't do that. It's only humans. We're the only ones who have that ability to. We've got that faculty, which sets us apart, and it means that we can plan and build and mess the planet up the way that we've done so, because we have the intelligence to mess it up, I suppose. And so I think this is where it can get confusing, this thing about, what do you mean about not living in the future? Because, you know, I've got to think about my life over the next few months at least. I've got this to do and that to do, and of course I've got to think about these things in the future. And I think there's a lot of confusion around that, and it's something absolutely worth pondering, because if you get into this sort of thing about I only live now, and misunderstand that, you then invariably become dependent on other people to bail you out, because you don't plan and you don't use common sense and you don't look after yourself, take responsibility for yourself. And in order to pull all those things together, of course you have to give some thought about next week, next month, next year maybe. Most of us are going to retire. Some of us already do, and so already are retired. And so you have to think, well, what about my retirement? Do I need some money? I got to look after myself, and if I don't, I'm just going to throw myself on somebody else. So that we do have to think about the future. I say, as far as I'm aware, no animals don't do this. They just live, respond to whatever's in front of them at the time. And consequently, they can get themselves into an awful lot of trouble, can't they? But we can protect ourselves and plan and things. So, you know, that's not, in a dharmic sense, that's not living in the future. Living in the future, living in the past, this is where your suffering is. And get confused by that. And there's a perfect example now, like just thinking a month ahead, 3 weeks ahead, of planning the trip. I mean, you've got to get your transport together and some money in your pocket and stop off and eat and stuff. So, you know, these things to... And talking about the clothes of planning your week out, what you need to take to get you through 7 days. Now that's what you do, because we're intelligent. We got the intelligence to do that, and there's huge benefits from being able to do that as human beings, human animals. We can do that. Where we get it wrong is that we then start to indulge in it, and rather than think of things in a practical way, and just, right, I've got 3 shirts to take and 3 t-shirts and socks and stuff, right, daddy died, right, good, that's it, and then that's settled, it's done. You've thought it through, you planned it, and then you put the subject to one side, you leave it alone. The living in the future bit is when you start to indulge, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to take enough. And whatever you want to build around those things, am I going to take enough? I mean, I remember last year it was really hot, it was really cold, and I don't want to get hot. But I don't want to be cold. Maybe I could get away with not wearing white things in the shrine if I sort of... But then you start to indulge, you get caught up in the thing, and you start to get neurotic, you start to get indulge in the situation and then envelop it and bring a lot of emotion, bring a lot of attachment, and then build scenarios, because that's a very simple, excuse the pun, a very black and white operation. There's nothing, it's very simple. I mean, it's absolutely as simple as you could imagine. It's not a complicated exercise, but you can make it complicated. Oh, hang on, have I got enough stuff? Am I going to have enough time to go and buy this and buy that? And then is it going to be enough? Maybe I should take more. Maybe I should take... Oh, I don't want to take too much because I can't. And then if I end up turn up with all these bags, people are going to laugh at me, and then I'm going to... And so you can just indulge in what is a straightforward... what should be just a straightforward exercise about what you're going to be doing very shortly, and you say that for the rest of your life but all the other things in your life. Or you can pick something up, as I say, and then you can indulge in it and get neurotic and bring a lot of self-identity to these things. And play these scenarios out and get caught up and play things over and over and over as we do. And so we make something which actually is simple, and B, nothing is ever guaranteed anyway, so there's not much point in getting too caught up with things, because everything is provisional in the future. Even going to Trigonos in 3 weeks is not a guarantee for any of us. We all assume that, but who knows what's going to happen in the next few weeks? None of us know, but we set it up, and all being well, and almost certainly that will take place, and you go ahead and you do it, but you don't make a problem of it. Making the problem is this self-identity that we start. Oh, I'm going to get. Oh, what am I going to do when I'm 60, 64? Who's going to look after me? I'm going to be lonely. I'm going to be sick. Who's going to look after me? I'm going to be decrepit. And all of this stuff, just creating these worlds for when, as an example there, and it is a big thing for a lot of us, when you get to retirement age, your life changes, your body can't function in the way that it used to, and there's all sorts of scenarios that you can buy into, all of them projections, none of them have any reality outside of your own creation. That's called living in the future, indulging. When you indulge in, but it's the self-identity when you indulge in these things. And if you watch your mind and see how it works, that's what we do. We don't just simply think of, very often, hopefully we do at times, this is all things where we just, there's something to do in the future and we think it through, we plan it the best we can, do the whole deal, and then just put it to one side, put it in a box somewhere and forget it, rather than bringing it out every 10 minutes and then playing it over and over, and all the scenarios that go with it, all the possibilities, all of which are just almost certainly that's not the way it's going to be anyway, but that doesn't stop us from just indulging in ourselves. That's what we do. And when we're indulging ourselves, we just create dukkha. And then we get the tension, and we get all the angst that goes with it. That's called living in the future. And if we observe our minds, wake up to our minds, just observe it, because we're chattering away to ourselves all the time, most of us, most of the time. I think that's pretty fair to say that. Just watch your... Are you just using your thoughts on what they should be, which is that wonderful human faculty where you can think things through and plan and do things that animals can't do, look after yourself and engage with the world? Or are those thoughts, yes, there is that, but are you then indulging in these things? Are you creating all sorts of stuff, chattering away to people, creating these scenarios, relationships, creating these conversations and these things and all the possibilities and all the and all of them got nothing to do with what actually is happening, and just creating, just embellishing what should be, just using a faculty, a very gifted faculty that we got, but abusing it, making it, turning it into a self-identity, and indulging and reinforcing the self by indulging in these thoughts, in these things that you plan and things that are going on in your life, indulging in there, getting in there, and just playing out these scenarios that either are just purely fictitious that aren't going to happen, or maybe because then that applies all to what, to the past, to your history, replaying things over, thinking of things in the past, not just objectively, just thinking, you might do, just think it through, and yeah, that was like that, and it was this, and then putting it down and forgetting it, or just playing over and over, carrying things around all the time, situations, oh, if only I'd said this, if only I'd done that, I wish I hadn't have done this, I wish I hadn't have done that, and then playing all the scenarios out that those thoughts bring up. This is the self. This is where yourself, this ego, this me, this self-identity exists. And you create it. And you indulge and you get caught by it and you reinforce it and on it goes. So then you spend your whole life just playing out these mental scenarios, these dreams, just these mental pictures of the past and the stuff in the future. Oh, but what about this present moment? Oh, we don't do the present moment, do we? It's always in the past and in the future, and this is creating. This is your samsara. It's called samsara, and it's all self identity, and you look at that, and you've got the opportunity. And you see that. You look at those, not the things, not the planning of what. Clothes you're going to take with you to Trigonos, and maybe planning your journey there. You look at, okay, you've got to do that. What else are you going to tack on it? All the little scenarios you're going to tack on, all the little problems that you begin to imagine that are going to happen, and then you buy into them. Then you create little stories, create these stories around things. Just see the way the mind works, because that's how it works. Because if you didn't have that self-identity that somehow magically arises from your thoughts, this thing that these thoughts are me, I am these thoughts are me. If you didn't, there would be no self. There wouldn't be this person that create so many difficulties. So when you're going into this applies across the board, across to every aspect of your life, but we are actually going on retreat, I think just about all of us will be on this retreat in 3 weeks' time, and just watch your mind between now and then when Trigonos comes up. If you just look at it as a place that you're going to, all the practical things that you have to put in place, see how much further your mind then goes beyond that. Because actually you don't need to think beyond that. Actually, when you get to Trigonos, a few of us have got little things to do to keep it ticking over, but actually you go there and there's absolutely nothing to do. We don't even have to cook, we don't have to wash up, we do nothing. In that beautiful environment, even if it's raining, it's still lovely. So you've got no excuses, there's no reason for you to think about Trigonos whatsoever, actually, beyond the practical things. But just watch your mind and see how you do. You may not. Well, I bet you most of us do. And you got the first day, and you think, then the second day, and then the mountain, you start climbing the mountain. Oh my God, 7 days, 3 days, 4 days. And I just watch, maybe you're doing it already. Maybe you've already done it. Maybe many of you have hesitated about signing on to go to Trigonos because it's going to be so difficult, it's going to be this and that, and because then you look at last year or the year before and how on the second day I went to the lower realms and I stayed there for a day or two and the difficulty, the physical challenges that we have, and you got all of that, and then you should I go this year? It's too much. And then when you do decide to go, you then start to create another mountain of all the things that you're gonna, all of these different experiences that you're going to have. and all the emotion that starts to feed into that, and how you go there and you feel like you want to keep walking and jump in the lake down the bottom of that, because it's going to be, you decided it's going to be difficult. And there you are. That's called samsara. You are the creator. Don't blame me. Don't blame others. You are the creator. Now you can go there with a nice, clean, fresh, open mind. Yes, you think of the practical thing. You can actually look forward to it because, A, it's a week off work and a week away from your routine. All of that gets put to one side. You go there. It's a fantastic environment. We all love it. And you can go with a really positive mind. You don't have to then start to indulge with the meditation because you don't know. That's why. You can imagine the scenery, your room. You can imagine the food, the fantastic food that we have. You can start imagining, well, this was. You can imagine all that, but you can't. How can you start to imagine your meditation? Because you've not done it, and you don't know what's going to happen because this thing is moving all the time. But you can turn it into a problem if you wish, or you can go with a really fresh, open mind where you don't think about the sitting and you don't think about the week and the day after the day after day after day, but go there with a spirit of just being, of just going, as the saying goes, from one incense stick to the next, one period to the next period, just one deal with one and then go to the next one. And when you finish that one, then it's gone. You don't have to indulge in that one, and you don't have to project into the one into the future, because basically you don't know. And even if it did turn out to be exactly as you imagined, why suffer twice? Just have the suffering once when it actually happens. Why spend all the time building up to it, suffering, and then just compound it? There's a good chance that you probably half created it before you've even got there. You decided it's going to be like this. Better to go with a really fresh, open mind. As I say, going to trigonosis. There's nothing to think of. There's nothing to think about. You haven't got to think about what you're going to have for breakfast, or go and make your food, and go shopping, and what you do in your daily life. Everything's on a plate for you. Everything's laid on for you. So there's no excuses, no reasons at all to indulge in any of that and create. But watch your mind and see what it does. And there you learn so much about yourself. And that's, to me, this is one of the fantastic gifts of meditation, of learning to sit and to... just to sit, never mind the technique and all the stuff that we then start to fantasize about and have desires about. Just learn to get to know yourself in that process of learning to be still on the cushion. When you're still on the cushion is when you're going to get to see yourself in a way that you will not see yourself when you're off the cushion, because you're in a place of non-distraction. And you're being still. At least you're being physically still. There you can really get to see yourself, to look into that mirror, when that mirror is as clean and as bright as you're going to experience. Look into that mirror and see yourself, and see the whole of how we create this world, this thing that we experience, and see that whole world is about creating the future and indulging in the past. See that, and see, just wake up to that. See it as clearly as you can, even if you can't do anything about it. At least begin to see that's. How you create this thing called me, the self-identity. It exists in those, in that, in those experiences. And when you see that, hopefully, hopefully you'll see another place where neither those two exist. And that's to be discovered. And it's amazing how we don't actually know that. So we say that third option, the past, the future, and there's a third option. And the whole of our training, the whole of our commitment to this training is about discovering the third option. And that third option requires us to know the other two, so that we can begin to let them go. Now, this third option has a different quality altogether, because this is something that we create. The past is what we create, and the future is what we create. But this third option, you don't create it, and that in itself is massive, because you spend your whole life creating the past, living in the past, living in the future, creating all the time, becoming bhava, becoming all the time. All this indulging, and it's all me, whether it can be very, very pleasant. It's not all doom and gloom, it can be very pleasant. But it's all creating, and it's all to do with thought, and whatever the thing is. It's always seemingly it's just happened or it's going to happen. But this third option is what we begin to discover when we learn to be still on the cushion. And that third option is not, as I say, is not one that we actually create. And that is, what do you mean they don't create? I mean, that's taking you somewhere that you've never been aware of. That third option. Because it's always me in control, creating, whether it's good or bad, whether it's greed, hatred, delusion, fear, whatever. Somehow I'm there, I'm involved with it, I create it. Now there's another option here, which I don't create. I mean, I've got to create. I want to be happy, therefore I've got to create something in order to be happy, or to be liberated, to be enlightened. I've got to do something, I've got to create whatever it is. I mean, it's obviously very subtle and very wise, but nevertheless, there's a doing there. I've just got to find out what the right thing is that I have to do in order to get this third option, or to get this enlightenment thing, or whatever. And well, you can pursue that if you wish. Good luck. Hopefully you'll wake up to that sooner or later, that actually that isn't the characteristics of the third option. But by learning to be still, by learning to be still on the cushion, that third option begins to, you begin to wake up to that third option, that there is a place, there is a place that we call stillness, that's within stillness, that is the third option. And that stillness is not in the past, it's not in the future. And the characteristic of that stillness, when you don't indulge in those two opposites, is the place of peace and freedom, of liberation. But it could also be very freaky, because you're not in control. That this discovery is not something that you create. And to see that is so big, because there's always this little subtleness there of a doer creating. However subtle and however wise, however refined it may be, there's this sense that it's something that you have to do, that you have to create, and that's very subtle, and that defeats most people. Not, I wouldn't even say some people, I would say most people. And that actually is not that's not a bad place to be, because at least you're not rocking and rolling with all of this other heavy, more heavy stuff. You get into this place, but even that is not the real third option. And when we can begin to see it with that ability to be still and to be able to reflect, we see that that third option is about letting go, not indulging, not chasing after, not being caught by all these mental scenarios that become a self-identity of the past and the future. And see that that third option, which is right in front of us, that's actually with us all the time, that we don't create, but we discover there. There's your place of liberation. And that's the birthright of all humans, to find that, what you might call a third. I never thought of that before. Third option's quite good, actually. The third option. but not to imagine that third option is something that you create, but something that's discovered. And you can do it. You can begin to discover it on the cushion and begin to realize that the more I can, even if you just sort of get close to it, even if you begin to touch it, you're beginning to feel some of the quality of it. The quality of it is that you're not caught. And so when you start to go indulging in the past with all your thoughts and experiences and replaying and stuff, you see that you lose that. You lose that stillness. So then you say, no, no, no. And you know that if you go there, it's just dukkha. It's just going to create difficulties for you. And you indulge. And you feel sorry for yourself. And regrets. And all these emotions. So you don't go. And the same. It's exactly the same. The future is the same as the past. The past for us has more sort of solidity because we have direct memories. The future is something we project, but the projection for the future is always based on the past. This is my experience, therefore it's going to be like this. So you can't have one without the other. And hopefully you begin to realize that the more that you do that, the more that you're making mountains all the time. You're creating. This is called samsara. This is how I would define samsara. People like to say that this world and this experience is samsara. Say, oh, I'm in samsara. I don't think this isn't how I would see define this as samsara. Samsara is what you create in your mind. And it's always there. And if you can begin to just see what you do to yourself and begin to find that third option, then this is called freedom. This is when you become free. So that when the thing comes along, like for me, you know, Trigonos is coming. I mean, I've done it enough times now. A little bit of planning, a little bit of thought about this and that. Of course I got to do that. But in terms of the sitting and that experience there, I don't even go there. It's just futile. It's just utterly, utterly futile. And I know if I go there, that I'm going to create difficulties. It's unlikely I'm going to go there and say I'm going to be blissed out for a week. But I could probably go there and say, oh, I'm going to be suffering. This and for this reason and that reason. So I just don't have any thought about it. Maybe you have to do this enough times until bash yourself up over and over before the penny drops, that it is an absolutely futile exercise. Now, it doesn't take away your commitment that you are going to commit yourself to give of yourself the best of yourself with the commitment for that period. But that's when it stops. And if you can sit, not only then does this retreat become something completely different to you, but also you can see that that's just an example, a metaphor for the rest of, for the whole of your life. Never mind about yesterday and tomorrow. 5, 10 years time, 20 years time, 30 years time. These aren't different things. All this projecting. Oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And then get all worried and tense, and then try to live your life for the future. What an absolutely ridiculous thing to do. And then what you do then is that you completely deny yourself in the here and now, because you're just living for maybe even decades for some of you. When you don't even know if you're going to get there. And if you get there, I'm almost certain it ain't going to be the way that you think that it's going to be. Things changing all the time. Everything is impermanent. Take impermanence on board, and if you take impermanence on board, you won't get fixed on things. And then get neurotic because things are changing. Or, no, you mustn't change. It's got to be like this because this is the way I want it to be. It's going to stay like that. And all the time it's moving all the time. This is why we suffer. Instead of concerning yourself, use your intelligence, but try to come into what is the experience that you're having now. And then when you can pull this off without these tentacles, without these energies pulling you, this is when you wake up, this is when you begin to taste this amazing, unbelievable experience that you are in the middle of, that it doesn't pass you by because you are so caught up with some neurotic fantasy that actually has no reality at all, and yet totally diminishes your life. It robs you of experiencing what is inexpressible, that can't be described. We're in the middle of it. That's not samsara. We need to wake up to that, and this is what we do. This is the human condition. We create this for ourselves. And just as this, I mean, you can bring it to everything in your life. There's nothing outside of this. But, you know, we are going on this retreat, and it is very challenging. And why shouldn't it be challenging? Because it's challenging all the stuff that you've created. All the stuff I'm talking about is going to be challenged. But there's a part of you that's not a part of that. And that part of you that's not a part of that doesn't project, doesn't live in the future, doesn't live in the past, but only is the present. It lives in the present, it is the present, but it's not separate from the present. There. Now, if you can find that, access that, and we've all got it, because that's who you really are. That is the real you. That's the bit that's not deluded. That's the bit that's concrete. That you can find that and invite that more into your life, then you will experience this experience, which is that you can't define, that you can't really articulate on. This something that's beyond the whole of our dualistic creation, and we're living out of it. And there's a part of you that's connected with that. We're not connected with it. It is it, but we can say that that's what we're connected to. That is the real, and that's the third option there. And we've all got it in abundance. So you can't, and it's got nothing to do with whether you're male or whether you're female, whether you've had a privileged upbringing or whether you haven't, whether you're intelligent or you're not intelligent. It has nothing to do with anything. It transcends every feature of of human makeup, all of us, we have that third option, as I'm calling it. And it's for us to find that. And if we can find that and open and learn to trust it, because it's trust, because there isn't anybody there who's in control, it means you have to surrender your neurotic attachment to looking after yourself, protect yourself at all costs. Whatever it takes, I must look after myself. It requires you to surrender, to open with trust, to let that go and pull the curtains back onto what has always been there. And if you can begin to do that, then things like a one-week retreat there takes on a completely different experience, a completely different perspective, but when you get ever closer to it over the next few weeks, your whole relationship with it is totally transformed. And you still don't know what, when you get there, you may well have a really difficult time. But that difficult time is just there in the moment. It's just there now. The difficult time isn't extended all the way back to now, and then you hold, and then when it's over, you don't let it go, and then you carry it on for X number of weeks. So, what's something which is just the way it is, and you've got your stuff to work through, and that's the way it is, and it's difficult, and it starts here and it ends here, and that's it, and that's what you have to deal with. It's not this big. We make it that big when actually it's only this big. And then when it's finished, we get off the cushion, we let it go. We don't indulge in it, we don't feel sorry for ourselves. We let it go because we come to the next sit, and we don't know what the next sit's going to be. You don't know. Don't care how clever you think you are. You don't know what the next sit's going to be. So don't think about it. And don't think about the retreat. And if you can do that, you're discovering a part of you that's not a part of this person, this me thing. You're beginning to make contact with what is your true nature, who you really are. And the more that you can begin to identify that part of you, and the more you can encourage it, open it, trust it, because it means letting go. It means that you have to let go of your desire to be in control of your life and everything and everyone in it as much as you possibly can. You have to learn to free that thing up and just begin to take chances with things, open up, in order to discover that part and to trust it and to go with it, to open up. And that part of you that actually is very intelligent, not intellectually, but it's this sense of stillness, that part of you that you're beginning to discover, will actually begin to carry you and begin to help you, to carry you into your life. Trust it more. Don't trust the ego, this thing that creates, because it's totally unreliable. And will change at a snap of a finger when its circumstances change. Learn to open, learn to trust. Find that stillness. And if you got that, the more you can bring that into your life, the more free you will be. You won't be caught by the past and the future. You really won't. And then you begin to taste this moment, this thing that's totally mysterious and yet totally wonderful, absolutely wonderful, it's beyond your imagination. Begin to make contact with that, and then you begin to fulfill your human birthright. We all are born with that. We're not born to live in hell. We're born to discover that nature within us, that divine nature. We all have that faculty within us, and we need to find how we can discover, rediscover who we really are. And just coming back, you know, it's a great model. It's a great model because, you know, going on retreat is a very emotional experience, isn't it? It's gonna pull on all of your emotions. This is really an emotional thing. This isn't like just going to work or just doing some exercise, learning something, studying something. This is emotional. And to be able to go into that experience with the correct spirit, the correct attitude, the correct knowing will help to take you through, to carry you through, so that you make it through to the other, which we all do anyway, mysteriously. We all make it to the other end. But that journey through that experience can be so much lighter, so much freer, so much with so much understanding and wisdom there that's just waiting, aching to burst through, to help to carry you through into with your in your life. And it's just a model that you can give a lot of attention over this next while, and just watch yourself. Even if you can't do anything about it, even if it's too big for you, and you get into all sorts of snot, okay, that's the way it is. Don't make a problem of that, but know it. See it coming when it's there, and you can't do anything about it, and you're caught up by it. Know it. That's the key. Know it, and know. That's your dukkha. That's your samsara. That's your creation. There. And that's the seed. There. And don't lose that knowing, that knowledge, that seeing of how this whole thing works. And from there you can begin to, as the thing comes around and around and around, you begin to wake up to it more, and hopefully you can then just not go to places where you used to go. You can begin to say no. You can begin to let go. That's the path of freedom. You're on the path of freedom, as it's called. You're beginning to go beyond the shackles of self and your suffering. So make use of that. And when we're on the cushion here today, you have this amazing opportunity. You can't imagine the karma that you've got, that you're given that opportunity. When you think of the distractions of the world and all the things and the nature of human existence and the struggle and the difficulties that so many have, here we are, we have the luxury to be able to just sit and be with ourselves. And when you're with yourselves, you can begin to crack open this thing that we're caught with. That we're caught and we're bound by. Make use of it. See it. Begin to find that third option. That stillness. There. That's the place of... That's where you want to be. Let this go. And abide here. And if you do that, then there's no past and there's no future. There is just the fullness of this moment. The mystery of this moment. That doesn't project backwards or forwards, because backwards and forwards is just a creation. There is just this moment. Open to it and discover what is your true nature. So, make use of it. Don't pass up the opportunity. It's the most important thing you'll ever do, and it will run through your entire life, everything that you touch, think and do. This isn't some isolated exercise. It's about every sinew that you are, and you have the opportunity. So, now it's your turn now. If you've got any comments or thoughts, queries. Now's the time to
Could I describe an experience I had last night? I find this happens to me quite often, in that when it's around bedtime, sort of 10 or 11 o'clock at night, I'm feeling a bit tired. And when I get tired, I seem to have less awareness or less control over the thought processes that go through my mind. So it feels like a real habitual tendency for my thoughts to become quite negative. Especially if I find myself, if I've been in my own company all evening and then I go to bed, it's very quiet and there's no distraction there whatsoever. I've got enough awareness to see what's going on, the thought passes, thought processes, and the emotional states that are happening in that moment. And I was noticing, particularly last night, that I was thinking, why do they gravitate downwards? Why are they gravitating in this way? You know, it's like, it felt like a groove, a well-worn groove that I couldn't get out of, And it just felt like so habitual, this tendency, this mental, emotional, quite dark, really.
Well, you've just said it.
Yeah.
It's habitual. Mm. You've created, we're conditioned beings, you've created a thought structure. And it's all self-identity, you know. And that's where you go. And that's what you've put in place.
And it felt that I was sort of aware that this was going on.
Mm.
I brought myself back.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's it. If you can, like I say, you've got that awareness, that mirror-like quality, you can see what's going on, which, you know, in the past you wouldn't have seen. You'd have just indulged in you've that's where you've created the thing, and you've embedded it, and you've never questioned it, and you've always been a victim of it. Now you're beginning to get some awareness. You're beginning to be able to stand back, as it were, and look at yourself and look at these things, and wake up to these thought patterns, to these habits that you've got. Well, that's big, because if you don't have that, then nothing's ever going to change. You're just going to keep reinforcing it. But then that's like this, when you're at the crossroads then, the more you become aware of it, just awareness itself can often take the edge off. To be aware and to indulge in something is very difficult. You use one or the other. And the more awareness that you have then, you see that you can begin to say, no, I'm not, no, no. And if it's self-indulgent, because I know I've had that, and I've mentioned it occasionally, this self-indulgence, it's like you feel sorry for yourself, you know. And I had that big time when I started this. It's something that I was even aware of before, but I thought, well, that's it. And I'd become even more aware of it. And I could see myself just starting at the top, starting to feel sorry for myself. Everybody, nobody likes me. Everybody's having a go at me. Why me? Poor me. Nobody loves me. And I could see this thing going down like that. And so I become more and more aware of that. And in the end, I was just, no, I'm not doing it. And then when I started to go, I said, no. And then just diverted myself into something else, whatever. Just, because you can't be doing two things at once. No, not going. And there's a whole part of you saying, yes, come on, let's really feel sorry for myself. This is fantastic, you know. And it's so me, it's me. That's all it is, it's me. that's dragging you down, but there's another part of you now that's beginning to... And you say, no, I'm not doing that. And it's so difficult because it's such a habit, and you do it, but bit by bit, you just say, no, I'm not doing it, and then just think, so start singing to yourself or something, or think of something positive, or, you know. Think, well, actually, it's not that bad stuff. Christ, shake yourself out of it. Give yourself a kick up the backside, you know, without indulging in that either. But it does take a, you know, like an act of saying no to yourself, because it's a very strong habit. And I know for myself, actually, I was really surprised that I got rid of that really quite quickly, actually. And that's something I had all my life, what I can remember. And you just indulge in self-pity. And that's something I love to do. Absolutely loved it. And you see that, you know, that's just a rubbish place to be. And there has to be some commitment from you. It's no good just observing it all the time, because it's a very powerful energy that's been in place for a long time. And just looking at it sometimes has an effect. But if it's something that's entrenched, just looking at it is not going to be enough. Sometimes you just have to say no and divert yourself. And then you don't feed it, and slowly, you know, hopefully you don't go there anymore with it.
Observance, just observing it, is not partaking.
Well, the observer doesn't partake of it. You may think that it does, because of your lack of clarity, you think, well, this is all part of... But hopefully you come to discover, the more that you learn stillness, this quality that we have to discover, because we don't know stillness. We don't really know what stillness means, what stillness really is. We think that all stillness is part of me. But you begin to realise that, you know, that part there that's watching, as it were, that awareness, stillness, whatever you want to call it, it's got all sorts of... Well, you can call it your true nature, if you like. And that's how close you are. That's watching it isn't a part of it. You're convinced that, oh, this is all part of me, this is all part of the package. But the more you become still, the more you wake up to your stillness, the more you see what it really is, it actually is not, it's not a part of that at all. That's the third option, that's the third way. It's not a part of that, but a part of our delusion is that we think, well, that's a part of describing me. Or sometimes I am still. I can't be still. When you're still, there is no I. Just stay in stillness. There won't be. There is no I. There's no. You're just here. The self can't be in this moment. To be locked up in this. So you begin to find that part of you that's not a part of that thing that you've been indulging, that defines you. This person. Really see that, well, hang on, this is not me, this is my liberation, you know. If it's only possible for me to have this experience more and more, that's where I'm going to let go of the shackles of me. And that could be me saying that, in fact, that could, well, because me will want the stillness as well. Well, that's the way it is, but hopefully there's another part of you that says, oh yeah, okay, if you like. But actually, you know that it's not a part of me. And you know, to give absolute priority, there is nothing more important but to find that part of you that's not a part of this. It's almost like you're schizophrenic. Except, you know, schizophrenic means like two people, as it were, two personalities. This isn't a personality in that sense at all. So you're discovering a part of you that's not caught up in anything that you create, and you've got to trust it, and you return to it as well. And that's where you come to the cushion. When you come to the cushion and you find the stillness there, get familiar with that, embrace it. Just this is it, and it can be the most boring place the most boring experience you can have. That's why we don't stay there, because it's boring. There's nothing going on. We don't trust it. We want to do something, want to think of something, whatever. We have to go beyond that barrier. Learn to trust it, learn to stay with it more and more, and then see how that begins to come alive. And it actually is the one thing that is alive. Everything else is dead. Everything else is just has no reality whatsoever. This is, I mean, that's the paradox of it. How we've turned the whole thing on its head. This is about life, living with our thoughts and our fantasies and our this and that and the other. We think that, and this other bit is, you know, not it's something to fill in. It's a gap to fill in, so that, and it's actually the complete opposite. That's called ignorance. We've got the whole thing completely, literally upside down. It is absolutely upside down. Completely the opposite way round. And we think we're smart. Oh, I'm really smart. We're not. We're incredibly stupid, actually. From that perspective. We got it totally upside down. And you know what, to turn the thing back up the other way. By golly, you know, that's not done overnight. And the more you see it, the more you begin to see it, you know, you just end up, you just got to laugh at yourself, you know. You think you're so clever and you're this. And that's not to ridicule yourself and then get a negative, you know, image of yourself. It's the way it is. But it's incredibly comical, actually. It's so funny. It's so funny because you take yourself so seriously, and all of this stuff that you more and more see that it's just absolute nonsense that you've completely bought into and taken to be the real business, and this is the real, I'm really. And it's just, it is hilarious. But the problem with that is, the thing with that is, it would be even more hilarious. It's because we, until we see that it's hilarious, we suffer. That's the bummer of it. And so it's funny, but it's not funny. But when you can sort of break from it, see it, we are so full of ourselves, you know. And we think we're the bee's knees. But we ain't. But persevere with the awareness, and the more, and that's the key. And you've got to trust it, and you've got to come back and come back and come back and come back. All of these, you know, and that's so challenging for us. You know, it's not a joking business. It's very, very challenging for us. And it's very, this is emotion. This is not a mental exercise. It's emotions. You're going through emotions with this. But you have to go through them. You have to be prepared to not avoid these things, but embrace them and know them till they.
It feels quite paradoxical what you're saying, in the sense that the more stillness experience and the more clarity that you gain, the more that, for me, the more my past actions, my karma visits me.
Mm.
And you know, I can see the mistakes I've made in life, the harm that caused.
Mm.
And it comes, and my God.
It's an emotional journey, mate. It's absolutely emotional. This is not up here, this is down here. But you know, you can't change those things. What you can do is you know, determine not to fall into those things into the future. Say sorry. Maybe you have to go and talk to people and ask for forgiveness if it's that strong. So it's something that you have to let before you can let go of it. You know, this is a big deal that we do. This is why we have each other. You ain't going to do this on your own when you hit those things, when these things happen. And it isn't about your stuff. All your history will come up. He opens it. Yes. I'm sorry. Then these things can form. And when they fall, then you find that part of you that's... It opens up, so it's pulling the curtains back. Then you discover that part of you that's never been a part of any of that. Never, ever, ever been touched by any of it. Has no guilt. Has no history. No self. Time for lunch, huh?